big show for you here today. Zane Dahani of Fantasy Points has been grinding the news. I'm telling you, this guy has been consuming more NFL news than you possibly could have imagined over the last couple of months. And that is why he joins the show today, to let you know 12 storylines he has been tracking, the drumbeats from OTAs into mini camps as we get into training camp here. The 12 storylines you need to be paying attention to. We talk Jags backfield. We talk Bucks backfield. We talk offensive ecosystems in flux in Green Bay, Philadelphia, and much more. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is a first-time guest here on the program, somebody I've been very excited to have on the show, because he is a young man who has been as deep as anyone could possibly be into the NFL news the last couple of months here, I would say. That is Zane Dahani of Fantasy Points. Zane, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, man? This was something I was super excited to do, man. There's been so much news out there. And then you're a film guy. I feel like I've been a little bit of a film guy, too. And then adding the analytics on top of that, that's why I was really excited about this conversation, because all the information that we hear coming out of like OTAs and what teams want to do, all the offensive coordinator changes, role changes for receivers, running backs, I just feel like there's the application of what that may actually end up looking like. And your perspective is something that I just have always valued so much, especially when it comes to the receiver stuff that you have done with Reception Perception and then here on Yahoo as well. So I'm excited. I think this is going to be an awesome show for us to talk through all those role changes and offensive dynamics.
Well, you're far too kind, and I appreciate it, but I shouldn't box you in, you're right, as a news guy, and I'm not going to do that here, because you're a great analyst in your own right. You had a really great piece up recently about like route depth and how we kind of think about that, and we might reference that at some points during the show, about how it's actually the shorter routes that can be better for you in fantasy football than some of the deeper, like longer breaking ones. It doesn't actually increase your ceiling as much as people think, like, oh, these deep threats, you have this higher ceiling. Not so much, which I think is a great article that people should check out on Fantasy Points. So yeah, Zane is not just deep into the weeds with the news, he's also grinding the film, he's grinding the stats, and that's why I think this is going to be a great show. What we're going to do today is look at the 12 biggest fantasy storylines and questions that Zane thinks you guys need to be paying attention to as we're moving from OTAs and mini camps into training camp. And Zane, the point and thesis of the show here is that, and we were joking about this before we got going here in the green room, we were joking about the fact that I've said on the show the last month or so that, oh, well, whatever. Listen, a lot of stuff happens in June. Most of it doesn't matter. And I may or may not have been saying that because I was on vacation drinking wine in Portugal and not hosting the fantasy football show. That was Justin Boone. Shout out to him for holding it down for me. But we both know that's actually not true. Like, sometimes there are things that happen in June that it's the little drum beats that you want to track into training camp. So that's what we're going to try to do today for the people. We're going to get these 12 storylines that you're tracking the drum beats from early in the offseason and what they're developing into here as training camps are opening up as we speak. Before we get to the show, though, before we get into this here, I do have one promo here to announce, a big announcement here. Yahoo Sports and Cameo just teamed up, and now you can get a celebrity to announce your draft order from right inside the Yahoo Fantasy app. No more random number generators. It is just you, your league, and a celebrity. And shout out to kick off the season right. Join a league right now to access Cameo through the Yahoo Fantasy Football app. Sign up in the Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com/football. Yes, get a celebrity to announce your draft order. A pretty exciting shout out available for you there. But let's waste no more time. Let's get into it, Zane. Our first storyline in the first segment here, we're going to talk mostly overall ecosystems. We're starting in Philadelphia. What is the first storyline that you think people should be tracking here in training camp?
Yeah, this is roughly a completely new offensive system that they're going to be running here in Philadelphia. So we're talking about going under center for a guy like Jalen Hurts. We're talking about doing a lot more play action, attacking the middle of the field, things that you don't necessarily see when you watch the film from the Eagles in the history with Jalen Hurts. And then on top of that, They're talking about how they're going to shift their offensive system to more of a wide zone offensive attack from a rushing perspective. There's just a lot of nuance there. And then you talk about the faces that have left, too. We're talking about A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's no longer on the team. Then they've brought in Dontavian Wicks. They have Mekhi Lemon, who they added to the team. So there's just a lot more nuance to this team here in the offseason that I think is something that we need to pay attention to and figure out, like, hey, what's gonna end up transpiring? Like, there's different coaches in here. There's a new system. Are they going to run more 12 personnel? And really, like, is Mekhi Lemon even able to play and operate in a two wide receiver like look? So I keep thinking about what this offensive system is going to look like and who's going to benefit from those situations and whether Jalen Hurts can actually operate in that kind of system where he's under center, doing play action, forced to throw over the middle of the field, stuff that we haven't seen from him before. I was curious your take, actually, especially on the Mekhi Lemon component, where it's like, can he actually operate as an outside receiver? Does he need to be in a unique situation, kind of more like a Z, where he plays off the line a little bit, they get him in motion so that he doesn't have to get jammed at the line of scrimmage, things like that. And then, like, how does that fit with the stuff that Jalen Hurts does? I don't actually think it's a perfect fit necessarily, but I was curious your take.
Yeah, and you're right. This is a massive overhaul that Philadelphia is undergoing here, and I think it has been a little bit under-discussed. I would say from a real NFL perspective, it's probably been very well discussed that this is going to be a big transition for Jalen Hurts. But I think from a fantasy standpoint, even if you just look at the ADPs, most people are pretty convinced that it's going to work out. So it's good to examine this idea here. And especially as it comes to Mekhi Lemon, and Boone and I were talking about him on the show we did earlier this week. And I mean, I think if he hits the ground running, there's a chance that he could actually outscore Devontae Smith this year. I'm not going to project it that way because I'm really into Devontae Smith. I think it's only, as we said earlier this week, it's only probably to me, like, if we sim the season 10 times, it probably only happens 2 out of the 10 times, but that's not 0 times. And I think one of the reasons I'm really excited about Wicks and Lemon kind of working in tandem together as sort of what I would imagine is the Z receiver to start the year. And then, you know, Mekhi Lemon, when they get into 11 personnel, he'll be the slot. I think this offense, Zane, you know, watching the Green Bay Packers the last couple of years, I think that's what this offense is going to look like. They're really good at working these outbreaking routes off play action, which, especially to like the Z and slot receiver, you think about a lot of sail concepts there. That to me does really overlap with, one, what Jalen Hurts does well, and two, what Mekhi Lemon can do from, I think, both the Z receiver position and certainly from the slot, like some of these bigger outbreaking routes where you're getting explosive plays. So I think there are ways in the passing game it can end up working out. I actually think for me, and I'm curious your opinion on this, the guy I've had the toughest time figuring out in this offense is actually Saquon Barkley. And that might sound stupid because, like, Saquon Barkley, great running back, whatever, but it is a big overhaul from a run game perspective too. I don't know what you thought about Barkley as an individual talent last year, just when you've watched him and everything, but, you know, Jeff Stoutland moving on as the offensive line / run game coordinator can't be overstated here as well. So Barkley to me has been a tough guy to rank in fantasy this year. Yeah. Where do you stand on Barkley and just him from a fantasy standpoint?
Yeah, the interesting thing with the offensive line too is that everybody's learning a completely new scheme. And sometimes I feel like we may underrate that, what that means for people, especially guys like a Lane Johnson, who's been around for a long time, right? Like, now we're being asked to do a zone blocking scheme, and that's not something that these guys have necessarily had as much experience doing. And then you're talking about the same thing for Saquon Barkley. Zone blocking versus man gap scheme type of runs are completely different. We're talking about there's a designed hole from a man gap perspective versus a zone blocking scheme where you need to be able to sift out where the blockers are and figure out your own cutback lanes and different things that really truly like challenge you from a vision perspective and make sure that you have like the true like running back, like, I don't know, I want to say like qualities that allow you to say, hey, I see this big hole, I'm going to make the cutback and I'm going to turn that into a big play. There's more onus on the running back themselves in that situation. And Barkley talked about how I think he talked to Todd Gurley about this, actually, because he was talking about how this is more similar to what the Rams were doing when Todd Gurley was there. And he was trying to get like feedback and takes on like, how am I going to like operate in this situation? And, you know, some people would say, hey, that's great that you're reaching out for feedback. But the other part of me thinks, like, is it really that nuanced to Saquon Barkley that he really needs to talk to somebody else and like figure out how to operate in this scheme? So I'm a little bit worried. And then the Stoutland thing, like you said, is not something that I think people are properly baking in. The offensive line had so many injuries last year, but now we get maybe a healthy offensive line. There's still a lot of guys that are old, so you could see them still get injured. But then on top of that, we're talking about a new offensive line coach who may or may not resonate with the rest of the team. There's been good feedback, but players have good feedback for coaches all the time. You know, that's something that we hear in the offseason. So
that's June. Like, that's a June headline. Like, players like the coaches. Yeah, of course they like them in June. Let's get into training camp and let's get a couple losses on the season and kind of see what happens there. So, yeah, no, I think this is one, in some ways, Zane, I don't want to overthink it because Barkley's a really good player. I think even still is a really good player. They have at least, you know, Landon Dickerson's healthy now. Lane Johnson's healthy right now. Jordan Mailata, like, that's three of the best offensive linemen in the NFL, period. Like, even outside of position and everything, that's three of the best offensive linemen in the NFL. So I don't want to overthink this too much. And yet, a big part of, like, round two in fantasy this year is breaking ties. And I just look at, you know, Saquon Barkley versus, like, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley versus Kenneth Walker. And, you know, some of the things you mentioned there about him fitting into his zone running scheme, Barkley's always been a great player, but he's always been a little bit of a home run hitter, right? Like, he's typically been a guy that he'll give you some strikeouts, but he's going to grand slam and home run some of these runs. So when you're looking at him in the second round versus any of those running backs and even some of the really good receiver picks, I mean, George Pickens, T. Higgins, I mean, certainly Drake London, everything. Where do you, like, is there a teardrop between some of these guys and him, or is he still kind of solidly in your second round range?
He's still in the second round range, but it's one of those things where it's like, okay, who am I actually comparing him to 1v1? And are there guys that have pass catching upside that could, like, somewhat quote unquote break fantasy in some ways? So a guy that's really close to him in ADP is James Cook. And some of the news, and we're going to talk about him later, but James Cook is an interesting guy as well because of some of the things that they may do with him this season. I prefer a James Cook over him. Then Kenneth Walker. We're talking about a situation with Andy Reid offenses where historically, before Isaiah Pacheco, they used to print money at the running back position. Damian Williams had value. LeSean McCoy, Jamal Charles. I mean, those are some, you know, obviously elite names and things like that too. But I think Kenneth Walker is a very talented running back. He just needs to be in more of a featured role. So you can make the argument that a guy like Kenneth Walker, James Cook, those types of guys maybe should go above Saquon Barkley because they have a higher ceiling. But then again, Matt, a lot of times you have to sit here and think about it and say, you know what? This guy has that production that I know from a week-to-week perspective, this offense is going to lean on the run, and they have the offensive line. You just got to take him. So I'm not trying to play both sides, but it's like, it depends on what you're looking for. If you are looking for a floor play, and especially you don't want to lose a draft, like, this would be an easy kind of pick to say, hey, I'm not going to lose the draft if I take Saquon Barkley.
Well, I think we're talking about a staff mock draft that we did here at Yahoo. We did it yesterday. I think we're talking about it on the show probably sometime next week, although I'm not sure off the top of my head. But I think it's really easy to get behind at running back if you don't look at some of these guys in the second round and you kind of look at some of these receivers. So I definitely think after that exercise, I'm probably actually bumping Barkley up my overall ranks, even if, there are some running backs that I'm considering over him. But to bottom line, when we're talking about drum beats to track, this is one of the offenses, like, I can't wait to see what you uncover from a news perspective about them in training camp, because right now they're doing the fun thing where Nick Sirianni's comparing Dontayvion Wicks to Keenan Allen, and like we're saying, they're getting all excited and everything. But I would love to see, like, what are the reports about how Jalen Hurts looks in the passing game? What does the run game look like? Is this coming together? This is going to be one of the more interesting ones to track. So is the next team that we're going to talk about here. We're going from a team that is installing a Packers style offense to the Green Bay Packers themselves. What are you looking at from the Packers offense, what you've seen so far in June, and obviously as we get into training camp here?
So this one's interesting because I feel like I've listened to you on this topic before, where they say, hey, The Packers are a team that typically likes to rotate receivers. They don't give anybody more than like a 75% route share. I think last year was like one of the first times, I think Christian Watson, when he played, and that might've been out of necessity. They had some injuries and different things like that going on. But all of the reports out of camp are, hey, we're ripping this offense down to the studs. What we want to do, we kind of cleared the runway for a guy like Matthew Golden. We got rid of Dontavian Wicks. We let Romeo Dubs leave. We didn't really add any depth. Obviously, we have Savion Williams as our wide receiver four, who we drafted, but he's still kind of like a project type of player too. Someone that profiles more as like a, you know, almost in a Jaden Reed-esque type of situation. Yeah. And so now we're saying like, hey, we want to do a more 11 personnel, play with tempo. We might want to lean on Jordan Love some more in terms of passing the ball, take some pressure off of Josh Jacobs. He's getting older. I think that this is a really interesting situation with the pass catching group because they drafted Matthew Golden the first round. Jaden Reed just got a big contract. Christian Watson just got a big contract. And every single person in the fantasy world, there's just such varying opinions on Christian Watson, on whether he's just like this like explosive play merchant or if he can actually fit into an offense and do some of the little things as well. Jaden Reed, obviously being more of a, you know, historically, sometimes I've seen a little bit more like Mickey Mouse stuff to steal one of your words. But I actually think he's got like some, you know, wide receiver chops too, where he can run some of the normal routes and stuff too. He worked a little bit deeper last year too, when I was reviewing the film. And then Matthew Golden, just a mixed bag. You know, his rookie year was not something that I think from a statistical standpoint, anybody really, really liked. But there were times on film for me when I watched it, he was open and Jordan Love missed him. And that happened too many times, in my opinion. So I kind of compare the Matthew Golden situation sometimes to what we saw from Quentin Johnston as a rookie, where it's like, maybe this wasn't necessarily the exact right role for him. But and then everybody kind of like turns their back on a player. What I want to say is like receivers don't all grow at the same time. You know, it takes some players to marinate, and you know that better than anybody else. In year two, what if he adds some extra tricks to his bag? They're going to give him the reps this season. I think like at his price, it's one of those things where it's pretty much baked in that everybody thinks that he's not like that good of a player. So I just think like there's immense upside for him right now, even though I was never really sold on him as a prospect, but he's just going so late in drafts where I'm like, it's worth like taking a dart throw on him. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Right. Cause like, if he's bad, who cares where he's going right now, especially in like traditional redraft leagues, he might be one of the first guys you drop if it doesn't work out. But to your point, like he's going to be on the field. He is going to get every opportunity to be this guy. And he might even be like the number two receiver in routes over Jaden Reed. I think that would be a mistake because I think Reed is a really dynamic player. And I'd like to see Reed do more than just the, to your point, Mickey Mouse slot receiver stuff. I agree with you. Even in 2024, Zane, like, he was running these big in-breaking routes and big corner routes. I mentioned earlier about how I think Mekhi Lemon could fit into kind of that, like on the sail concepts, the big outbreakers and corners. Jaden Reed, he can do that stuff as well. So I would like to see more of Reed this year, but I think Golden would have to absolutely flop in camp to probably get unseated as the second outside receiver. And one thing I think is interesting to watch with Golden, I think he was overall mixed as a rookie. I mean, even like using the Quentin Johnston example, he was much better on film than Quentin Johnston was, but he wasn't like so much better that I would go to the mat and be like, yeah, no, like Matthew Golden was really, you know, he was much better than you guys think. I think he was just like, he was fine as a rookie overall. I don't have a strong take on him, but yeah, he was adequate's a great way of saying it. It's one of those receiver seasons, especially in reception perception, where I look at it and say like, yeah, I think this could kind of go either way. Like he could just level off as like an adequate, useful player, or maybe there's a step in year two. I would be open to that one way or the other. And again, where he's going in drafts right now, take the shot, because if it doesn't work out, who cares? His impact on Christian Watson, I think, is interesting because I was on Beyond the Box Score with Jacob Gibbs recently, and he noted this stat, and I dug into it further. Christian Watson averages 2.67 yards per route run when Romeo Dubs is on the field last year. That drops to 2.19 when Dubs is off the field, which is still good, but it is a slight drop. More interesting, though, he has targeted Christian Watson on 25% of his routes when Dubs is on the field. drops down to 17% when Dobbs is off the field. And this is a little bit correlation causation here, Zane, but if I can give my theory on it, I think it's because Watson is at his best when he's not the stationary player, when he's on the move, he's the Z, he's off ball, and Dobbs is kind of that X receiver that just, you know, is a little bit of the sacrificial player. I'm wondering which role Watson fits into this year, because if you just look body type wise, right, and this is where I'll be fascinated to track this through training camp, Watson, it looks like the X receiver compared to Reed and Golden for sure, but I don't know that that's the best use of him. And I actually kind of think like Golden could maybe end up being a little bit of that sacrificial player, because he has some decent release moves against press. I would say that might have been the best thing he did last year. So those two guys, who's more the X and who's more the Z, I think that's actually quietly the key to figuring out both of their upside cases.
Yeah, and we haven't heard anything on that either. One thing I did note from using some of like the charted data from Fantasy Points was that Matthew Golden and Christian Watson, they were only on the field for like 50, 52 routes or something like that last season. Mm. And so there's not enough, like that's not a big enough sample size to truly determine like what is the different role when both are on the field. And then even if you add in like when was Jaden Reed on the field with them, it gets even smaller, right? So you don't have a good enough sample size. You don't have a good enough sample size, but when they were on the field together for those 52 routes, typically Christian Watson was the one that was running the deeper routes of the two. Mm. And I think I agree that that is the misuse of resources between the two players. Now, they say they're ripping the offense down to the studs. So does that mean that they're going to think about the roles that these receivers play in and potentially fit them more to their skill sets? I don't know. We got to watch training camp and see how that plays out. That's one of the big mysteries. And again, you talked about the routes run for Matthew Golden, how he's going to be the second most. I am a little bit more bullish, though, on the total route volume for all of these guys. And part of it is because what I heard was that they want to play with more tempo. And when they're playing with tempo, they don't want to rotate players out. And they want to stay in 11 personnel because they want to have Jaden Reed on the field as a dominant pass catcher. So I think we might actually see this Jaden Reed situation play out a little bit more favorable for fantasy than we have in the past too, where he's been more of like a 65-ish percent route runner. And now it's more, hey, can we get to that 75% level? And they actually operate out of 11 personnel rather than more mixing in 12 and 13, different things like that too. So I'm a little bit more bullish on Jaden Reed of the three options, mainly because I'm scared about the Christian Watson role and what they might end up doing with him.
I'm most bullish on Jaden Reed at cost, even though I like where Matthew Golden is going. It's cheap enough where, again, you should just take the shot. But with Reed, I mean, to go back to the article that we were talking about earlier, where, you know, the route depth really can be a big indicator here. Even if Watson is more in the role that I'd like to see is the movement Z, that's kind of mostly what he was doing last year, was as that like movement Z player. And even then, he still, in your article, you noted he still had like a higher route depth. And I mean, there's no way that Reed will not have a shallower route depth. And I also think this team, the offensive line is worse this year. I think the defense could be worse this year, which again will push more pass volume overall to these guys. But if it's just a team that's playing from behind more, they're playing in more chaos, I think we're going to see a lot more targets kind of just naturally flow to Jaden Reed in those situations, not just the explosive plays, but also kind of the gimmies, the layups and everything like that. So if you got burned by Jaden Reed last year, you know, what are you going to do? Like, it was a lost year, you know, it was just injuries and everything. But he is somebody I'm definitely willing to buy back in on this year. We haven't mentioned Tucker Kraft either, who's also, of course, coming off from injury. The Packers are, dude, we're going to go to break here, but just one last thing I just want to, like, the Packers are a weird team this year. Don't you? Do you find, like, I find them to be a bizarre team this year that I think a lot of questions on both sides of the ball and at key positions here beyond, like, the pass catchers are not going to rotate this year.
There's a question for every single player on that like skill position group offense. So like John, even getting into Josh Jacobs, like it's a question mark on one, he's got a legal situation that isn't fully done yet. Two, he was dealing with knee injuries last year. He's getting older. Is there something going on there? They've talked about wanting to implement Marshawn Lloyd a little bit more into the offense and Chris Brooks as well. So yeah, it's just every single player I feel like has some like small question mark that we need to address. It'll be fun to track during training camp and be able to report back to you guys on what I'm hearing.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are talking Broncos and Commanders offenses as we look at these teams that are having big offensive ecosystem changes. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk through training camp storylines you need to monitor based on the minicamp OTA drumbeats with Zane Dahani here. And Zane, this next one is really important for me to hear what you have to say because I am so over my skis, all in on Jaylen Waddle. What is the situation that we are tracking in Denver with a new play caller, which is still shocking to me to say?
Yeah, the fact that Sean Payton was like willing to give over play calling duties is still one of the biggest enigmas to me, because that's like his thing, right? So anyway, yeah, bringing in Jaylen Waddle, that is also one of the biggest like stands that I've taken from a fantasy perspective. His price was cheaper like multiple weeks ago, but now he's starting to get steamed up a little bit. And I still kind of like do this 1v1 on Jaylen Waddle where I'm like, hey, he's going near like a Chris Olave or something. And I still am like, dude, I want to hit the button on Jaylen Waddle. No, but I think this is one of those things where, this is one of those things where they brought him in because they lacked dynamism in the offense, right? So they kind of had Sutton, who's been that prototypical, like, hey, you can do a little bit of everything. And they've mixed him into, like, I wrote about him in my route depth article, actually. They mixed him in at all three levels, basically. But where he kind of like operates the best from my perspective is more intermediate and then also somewhat deep, as kind of like more of the big body type of guy. And Jaylen Waddle is a perfect fit, in my opinion, to fit in this deployment where this offense likes to do short area and intermediate area type of stuff. Right. So we're talking about screens. We're talking about little drag routes and slants. That to me is really like the way that, and everything that I've read is that's how they want to use him. But, you know, I think that there's a contingency of the fantasy community who thinks they brought in Jaylen Waddle to take the top off of the defense, but that's not what I'm hearing so far. So I'm actually very excited about what I've heard out of camp in the usage for Jaylen Waddle. I think that, like, you know, he's one of those guys that he just got overshadowed by Tyreek Hill in Miami, but he's a dude by himself. And so everything that I'm thinking through with Jaylen Waddle is this guy has the opportunity. Like, we're talking about fantasy breakers, like league winner type of players. This is one of those guys that I keep flag planting as like a league winner. I don't know. Like, I know you said you're like into him too, but I'm curious, like, why are you into him? Is it the route tree? Is it, you know, just the talent or?
Okay, this is so crazy that we're showing this Davis Webb quote. I have not seen this. The producer's just threw this up here. This is Broncos, again, new play caller, offensive coordinator, Davis Webb, saying this about Jaylen Waddle. He's a really good player. There are some similarities. When I was with Josh Allen going into year three, similar to Bo going into year three, and we traded for Stephon Diggs. The receipts are out there, folks. That is the exact comparison I made. When they traded for Jaylen Waddle, like, it's, again, it's a year three receiver, a guy who's on the second contract, like a proven guy that I think people still don't realize how good he is. That was my kind of, and I liked Diggs at the time a little bit more than I like Jaylen Waddle as a player, but that's only because, like, I viewed Diggs as a truly elite receiver in Minnesota, and Waddle's not quite at that level. But just so funny, I had not seen that Davis Webb made the same comparison here, because this is the effect I think this is going to have on this offense, Zane. And you kind of highlighted it there. Anytime you can get a guy who is going to get the designer touches, you know, the screens and the drag routes and like just get the football in his hands and let him cook type of stuff, but he can also run real deal routes and win down the football field. Like, that's a potential wide receiver one in fantasy football. When you can get that stuff along with the real receiver work. And I just look at this Broncos offense, like, they're not going to treat Jaylen Waddle, who they traded a first and a third round pick and are comparing to Stephon Diggs. They're not going to do that and then treat him like Troy Franklin or Marvin Mims. Okay. Like, that is not going to happen because he's much better than those players.
Right.
So to me, I just, everything you're saying there about what we need to pay attention to, what you're hearing about, like the usage for Waddle so far, like the type of targets he's going to get, that's the reason why I think he is just such a good fit. Where he goes in fantasy right now is a potential, like, leaps multiple tiers in terms of the wide receiver ranks.
Yeah, and I think that the wide receiver three in this room actually makes an impact on what we're going to see out of Jaylen Waddle, maybe Cortland Sutton. I don't know if you've thought about this either, but it's like, what does Pat Bryant do? And if he's the wide receiver three, how does he change what Cortland Sutton does or what Jalen Waddle does? But Troy Franklin, you know, he can operate as more of like a vertical receiver as opposed to a Pat Bryant. And does that like give Cortland Sutton more of the intermediate stuff and then Waddle the short stuff? And so I've just been thinking, that's the only like nuance that I've been thinking through with this wide receiver room is like, who the receiver three is, does that dictate what the role shifts to for the Jalen Waddle or Sutton? I think it's going to have a bigger impact on Sutton than it is Jalen Waddle. Yeah. Usually you're like dominant receiver, you put in a situation that like, hey, this is his role. Then the second receiver is mm-hmm. the one that like maybe you mix and match a little bit with that wide receiver three, depending on what their like route tree looks like. So yeah, I've been fading more of the Cortland Sutton situation just because I think that like he's going to potentially push deeper if they have Pat Bryant in the game more often, who is the guy that I think is going to kind of win more of that role as opposed to a Pat Bryant playing that role, because that's not where Pat Bryant operates. He's not a deep receiver. He's more of an intermediate kind of guy.
Yeah, you could pretty much lock in like the projections we're showing on the screen right now for Cortland Sutton. Like you could probably lock in about 750-ish yards and, you know, 5 or 6 touchdowns for Cortland Sutton. But I don't think you can really project a realistic ceiling here based on the environment, based on the Jalen Waddle addition. And there's just so many receivers that go after him in fantasy that I do think have a real path to a ceiling here. So I'm with you. I haven't been taking much of Cortland Sutton. And I think if it's Pat Bryan is the wide receiver three, Zane, one thing to just note is that means that Sutton as the X receiver is going to be the outside on ball guy. Because Bryant is a big body, they actually used him more on the line of scrimmage than off the line of scrimmage last year. So if that continues, that just means like, you're going to be able to move Jalen Waddle around consistently because he will be the off-ball receiver, which I think he will be anyways, but Bryant being the third receiver would have a pretty big impact on, you're right, that's something to note. He would have a pretty big impact like on how the other guys get used here. Okay, let's get to our last offensive ecosystem change that we're monitoring here, and that is in Washington with David Blau taking over. This is one I have also been obsessed with thinking about, so curious to hear what you've read so far on the Commanders and what you're looking for as we go into training camp.
Yeah, the Commanders offense is also really interesting because there's so much of a difference from what you saw from Cliff Kingsbury, right? Because Cliff Kingsbury is just notable for basically leaving receivers on their side of the field, playing at a really strong, fast pace, operating out of the gun, and they're basically changing all of that. What they've said is, hey, they want to move Terry McLaurin around the formation, right? Last year, I think he was like 85% on the left side and on the outside. Whereas now, and I think that was like one of the top numbers. Yeah. So just think about doing your full-time job right now and someone just asking you to do the exact same thing every single day for like 365 days a year. That just sounds boring, right? Like, and that's what McLaurin was asked to do. So moving him around, potentially getting him in the slot sometimes. And then, you know, now they're thinking about how can we go under center and do play action with a lot of motion? And there's been a lot of great fantasy analysts out there that have done analysis on this. We see it on film as well. Anytime that you can do under center play action and have like a reasonable threat out of like 12 personnel is a great way to use it too. A reasonable threat to trick the defense. You always see those linebackers take one step forward, right? And that's what they're hoping to do. They're hoping to make those linebackers take one step forward with the play action, which then opens up that middle of the field a little bit more for a guy like Terry McLaurin to just kind of be right behind the defense, right? So I think these offensive changes and then how they can utilize Chig in that situation too. They're talking about him. If they do 12 personnel, we're going to see a route share for Chig that he has not had in the past, right? Because the two tight ends on the field are going to be him and then either Ben Sinnott or I forget if they still have John Bates, but they have somebody else out there that they could also deploy. Yeah, exactly. So in that situation, like, I think that this is just going to play out. If they don't add a Stephon Diggs, this is going to be monster stuff for Terry McLaurin, who I think is still like, he's not an elite receiver, but he's a really good receiver. And then Chig as well, I think, can be option two in that offense while they rotate that wide receiver two position and just figure that out on the fly.
Yeah, I think it could look a little bit like Houston last year, where like it's Nico Collins has a consistent route share and then everybody else kind of rotates around him. I actually think Houston could end up looking a little bit like that this year, depending on Tank Dell's health. But overall, yeah, I mean, I think Terry is a really attractive target where he goes right now. Obviously, David Blau, we got to admit he's an unknown. I mean, the guy was playing football games not very long ago. So was Davis Webb, who we just talked about. I mean, shoot, we talked about Sean Mannion. He was in the NFL not that long ago. Like, these are all very, very, very new coaches and theories we're kind of working through here. But if it hits, man, I mean, honestly, even if it doesn't hit, your point about Terry McLaurin is so well taken. I joked about this with Boone when we were talking about Terry like several months ago. Every new coach, Zane, comes in and says, like, we're going to move our receivers around. We're going to move our number one receiver around. This is the first guy who said it, and it will objectively be true because nobody moves their receivers around less than Cliff Kingsbury. And for that reason, too, like, I think the route depth will come down on Terry. He will be less difficult, or he will be less easy for teams to just take out of the game because they won't know where he is. So these games where he has like five targets or something, that will be much less frequent in this new offense. So really excited about McLaurin. Obviously, we're tracking if Diggs signs here. We'll talk about Diggs briefly at some point during the show here, but the wide receiver two position, what's Antonio Williams doing? I am with you that Chigo Conquo is a really nice late round tight end. Just real quick before we move off of the Commanders, what have you seen so far on the back field, because that is obviously one of the more ambiguous ones in fantasy right now.
Yeah, so there's been a consistent reporting on this from all of the people that are attached to the Washington Commanders beat. So we're talking about John Keim as the ESPN beat, The Athletic as well. I can't remember who the name is, but and they're all talking about, and Ben Standig as well, who kind of operates in his own like independent fashion. Mm-hmm. Ben Standig was the one that was really early on the Brian Robinson news last year, where he said, hey, this guy's probably not gonna make the team.
Yeah,
and it's probably gonna be Jacory Kroski Merritt. Yeah, exactly. So he was a little bit early on that. He just wrote an article yesterday that talked about how Jacory Kroski Merritt is the one that has the opportunity to potentially build this offense into what they want it to be, which is to have a dynamic rusher and also a dynamic pass catching option. What's weird about that is that Jacory Kroski Merritt's profile is not at all a pass catching back. He hasn't shown that in any of his history, like dating back to, I think he played like 6 years in college or something. So you can check the stats on him, but he hasn't really shown that in his profile. The problem is that what they want to do is they want to give him the opportunity to earn that type of work. Notably, they have Rashad White, who has historically operated in that kind of role with Tampa Bay. So it would be natural for him to earn that opportunity, but I don't think that the Commanders really see him as a nice like rushing game threat. And so that's kind of what they feel that they can probably utilize Jacory Kroski Merritt a little bit more. And actually, I'm curious if you've also felt this way, but I'm hearing more and more from offensive coordinators and other teams that are basically saying like, we don't want to tip off run versus pass based off of personnel. And so like, if you have Rashad White in, it's clearly probably more likely to be a pass play. If you have Jacory Kroski Merritt in, it's more likely to be a run play. But I think what David Blau is trying to say is that they would like for that to not be the case. So they want to develop the talent of Jacory Kroski Merritt so that teams don't know that it's a run or a pass.
It sounds like JCM kind of has the first right to fail, essentially, here. Like if they get into camp and he doesn't take it and run with it, I think Rashad White, we were talking about him earlier this week, is sort of a guy that could end up being like this year's Javonte Williams, and that he's a boring vet nobody really cares for at this point, but he is functional in the pass game as a good pass blocker, and he'll get you what's blocked. Javonte was better than that last year, let's be clear, but I think that he could be sort of in that variety, but that probably means that JCM just didn't take the job and didn't seize it, because it sounds like, based on what you're saying, he's got the ability to do that. But yeah, 100%, like, this offense only functions, all this like cool play action stuff we're talking about out of heavy personnel, that only works if teams, you know, respect your run game. And even if it's not one of the best run games in the NFL from an efficiency standpoint, they respect it from a design and a schematic and your commitment to it. So I do think that's pretty key to track. And again, one of these two backs, I think Rashad White, JCM, is going to be like a really good fantasy pick. I think JCM has the higher ceiling, but it is still a theoretical ceiling. So he is somebody to really pay attention to and track during training camp. But we're going to transition here now to individual pass catcher units that have some ambiguity, some like mysterious, I would say, pass catcher storylines. First one up, it's, you know, I feel like we've already talked about this about 100 times this offseason, and we've got a long way to go till week one. So we're going to put up our big boy pants here, and we're going to talk about them once again. Jacksonville Jaguars pass catchers, Zane, what have you heard so far? What are you looking for as we get into training camp?
Yeah, the more I read about the situation, and I've written about this in many different ways as well, the more I read about the situation, I keep hearing things about how, you know, obviously Brian Thomas had this incredible OTAs, minicamp, everything. Mm-hmm. He did so well in that. But everything that they write about is, hey, this guy was running deep and he was catching a vertical route and that he's the vertical receiver for the team. Does that match what we've heard, what we've seen out of these type of like Leon Cohen type of like McShanahan offenses? Absolutely. In my opinion, this Brian Thomas role, if you're talking about him being that X receiver, it is usually a little bit more of like a vertical-ish type of role. And I wrote about this from a fantasy angle, talking about route depth. If he pushes deep like he did when they got Jacoby Myers last year, that's not a predictive, you know, kind of like role to be in, because you're just kind of like doing a lot of deeper routes that don't necessarily lend itself to the quarterback having that the opportunity to even hold on to the ball and get that ball over to that receiver. They started him out as kind of like a three-level receiver last year, and then after injuries and it not necessarily working out perfectly, they started moving him into this like more X deep threat type of like role. And their offense started to flourish, especially when they got Jacoby Myers. And then they put Parker Washington into the slot. And we've heard Liam Cohen talk about Parker Washington as kind of like a run after the catch, like built like a running back type of player. All of the reports on kind of the Parker Washington situation from my read have been really bullish. But, you know, I think he best operates in the slot. Just because he's, in my opinion, he's not necessarily like the best like press coverage, man beater by any means. Yeah. So I kind of see it as like, you know, Liam Cohen deployed this offense with Chris Godwin in the slot in 2024. Chris Godwin's a much better like route runner, in my opinion, than a Parker Washington. He was more developed at this point. But if that role exists and he's able to do more things that, from a run after catch perspective than a Chris Godwin was, which I think he has the talent to, that's kind of where I lean a little bit. And then Jacoby Myers is like your consummate professional. Like, I'm going to play the Z. You can rotate me into the slot. I'm going to do blocking. Like, he's a good player by like every evaluation, but he's not like a guy that you're going to say, hey, this guy just got 1200 yards in fantasy and broke it. The real 1200 yard, yeah, like, breaking fantasy is either going to be Brian Thomas or Parker Washington, or it could be nobody. That's like the situation that like bothered that. This is the one where if you could tell me one stat line for the full year, if you could tell me what happened with Parker Washington, that would give me like the key to unlock the rest of fantasy this year.
In a weird way, Zane, I actually want, like, I would love to know the route depth between BTJ and Parker Washington before we get into the season here, because one thing that's fascinating, totally echo what you said about BTJ in that one, I think it's bullish that he would be used as the X receiver in the offense, because I think that's the right use for him, but it's not the way he was used in his rookie season when he went crazy in the back half down the stretch and put up all these, like, he was used more as an off ball player then. Like, he was kind of used as, we're getting the ball in his hands and he's doing yards after catch stuff. And then for Parker Washington, he is really good with the ball in his hands. I totally agree with Liam Cohen. Like, he's one of the best after catch receivers I tracked last year, even if, yeah, his route running and separation is not the strength of his game. But Parker Washington was used as like a vertical downfield slot, not so much in like the Chris Godwin slot role, even though he is a guy that's over 200 pounds. Like, he's a little more thicker and compact than you'd think, Parker Washington. But if BTJ has the route tree that he had last year, not ideal. However, if he has like Mike Evans's route tree from 2024 with Liam Cohen, I think that's actually a little bit better. So to me, like, I wish I could know the exact route allocation for these two guys. But yeah, it could be the situation. I mean, ultimately, I think the base case that we should project here, Zane, and it sounds like a lot of what you've read so far kind of leans into this, is that this is like an everybody sort of rotates and gets theirs, but nobody really is the home run here. And obviously haven't even discussed the fact that like Travis Hunter is probably going to run like at least 20% of the routes here, which is going to eat into some of these right. players.
Yeah. And when Travis Hunter's on the field, what are they going to do? They're going to give him the ball. They're not going to put him in yeah. there to go block. So, so that just takes away targets when he's on the field. and it's funny because I think you and I kind of agreed on this last year where we were talking about, you were talking about this and I commented on it, but I said, and both of us said, hey, Travis Hunter just had his best game on film. I did a whole yeah. evaluation on the Jaguars last year, and he had his best game, his last game before he got injured. He actually ran real routes. Before that, he was doing all sorts of like short, like screens and weird, like, hey, just turn around and we're going to toss you the ball.
Yeah,
like, and that's not like
stupid.
I don't think that's the right way to use him. So it was kind of interesting.
No.
But yeah, I think that for me, it's really like to thread the needle as the X receiver in this offense. We've seen kind of how it's worked in previous situations, right? So if you talk about like the McShanahan tree, there's Brandon Ayuk in 2023, which is like one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best like film evaluations. Brandon Ayuk in 23 was like a
Same.
Monster.
Yeah.
And then Mike Evans in 24. And then last year with Davante Adams as the X in for the Rams. And it's hard to like, it's a hard needle to thread to be that efficient, right? Like Evans was getting a lot of deep balls and catching, but like he did more than that, but like he caught a lot of touchdowns. Davante Adams caught a lot of touchdowns last year. And then Brandon Ayuk, I think, was like at a yards per reception that was like almost like a record with his 1300 yard season that he had. So if Ryan Thomas is playing that role, do I think that he's just as good of a talent and receiver yet as those guys? I don't. Like, I think he's still
right.
a notch below, and he needs like to grow a little bit more to be able to produce that efficiency. Does that mean he can? I mean, going into year three, we see a lot of receivers produce a lot. So that's the one where if he does operate in that X receiver role and is able to produce, it has to be, in my opinion, based off of an efficiency play. And it's just hard to accomplish that. Like, we're talking about top receiver seasons.
Such a good point here, because Mike Evans was wide receiver 9 in points per game in 2024 as this X receiver in Liam Cohen's offense. But that also coincides with Chris Godwin got hurt halfway through that year when he was the guy that was running away as like it was him and Jamar Chase on a points per game basis as the two best receivers in fantasy that year before Chris Godwin got hurt. So that's a little complicating there. And then Ayuk was wide receiver 14. He had this unbelievable season in 2023. I agree with you. He played like a capital E elite receiver that year. And he was wide receiver 14 in points per game. So like Brian Thomas Jr. has to basically be not even just the player that he was in 2024. He has to be better than the player he was in 2024 if it's going to be this crowded and he's going to have like a wide receiver one season. I don't think that is impossible. I think that is like within the range of outcomes, but is it the most likely outcome? Probably not. So again, even regardless of all of that, like our opinions on the players, I think it is going to be critical, Zane, to track playing time and roles and everything of that nature there with this Jacksonville Jaguars receiver room. It's going to be so fascinating to see like what you uncover in terms of how these guys are deployed and everything like that. But we're going to take another quick break here. When we come back, we're talking more pass catcher situations we want clarity on. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And we had to take that break, Zane, because this next one, it's a big one. It's actually, well, it's about a small player, but it is a big, big story for, you know, maybe fantasy football, but for me personally, and that is Josh Downs, his role in this Colts offense. So what have you heard so far? What are we looking for with Josh Downs and his role in the Colts offense without Michael Pittman?
Yeah, so this was an interesting one because it was over 4th of July weekend, and I was reading an obscure article where some guy that probably isn't even a real beat but happened to be at practice, basically wrote an article saying, hey, I saw Josh Downs lined up on the outside. Then I start peeling back the onion more. Yeah, I know. Then I start peeling back the onion more. And I hear from Jake Arthur, who's actually a beat. And then I hear from mm-hmm. another beat writer. I can't remember every single person's name who say like, yeah, they're going to operate with him in two wide receiver sets. I'm excited about this. This is one of those things where I feel like people somewhat overrate the situation where a guy is going to operate more in like that Z kind of role. And you can get creative with receivers like a Josh Downs to be able to generate space and not have them lined up on the line of scrimmage. Z receivers typically, like if you got a tight end on your side, you're typically the guy that's like off the line of scrimmage. So you're not necessarily seeing press coverage. So a guy like him who's small, that benefits him quite a bit. And then they talk about how they want to utilize him in two wide receiver sets as well. The way that they want to utilize him is getting him in motion. So he could line up on the outside and then he could cut underneath a guy like Tyler Warren or some other tight end that's on the field, a Mo Alie-Cox or whoever, to be able to generate a little bit more space. So this is like one of those situations where I feel like we need to, like, as soon as we hear again and we see it on tape, because there's going to be more like film stuff that people post on X or any other platform where people will take like footage of Josh Downs actually being out there in two wide receiver sets. That's a big one because his route share is kind of like a key to unlock what I think is like a deep, like a kind of like a sleeper wide receiver option. Because okay, Alec Pierce is coming into the season a little banged up. Like, we're not even sure if he's going to play week one. Tyler Warren, being a tight end, like, if Josh Downs does get the route share that we think he can get based off of the way that they've kind of, like, designed this offense, he's the guy that I think could actually lead this team in targets. And if he leads the team in targets, then he's going to be in a spot where he's a fantasy value, like a big smash. I think he's a smash anyway. But like seeing that route distribution and seeing him get to like a 75% plus for me would be an absolutely insane value. I think he could break 1,000 yards if he got to something like that. Like, he's typically been in like the 60s. So this would be huge for him.
I'm so with you on this one. People that listen to the show know I love Josh Downs. He's one of my favorite, like, deeper receivers in the NFL. I think he could be a star. Like, I've always compared him to more of like a Tyler Lockett. Like, he's on the Tyler Lockett, you know, Ladd McConkey access more than the kind of typical slot only players, because he does have the release moves to get off press. But I think he will be hidden a little bit. And like, I was on the ADP chasing, and Jacob Sanderson, who's a Colts fan, made this point that, like, if you think Josh Downs is going to get held back this year, like, and be limited in terms of the route share, like, you kind of have to believe that Shane Steichen is an idiot. And I don't believe that Shane Steichen is an idiot, because, like, there's just no way that they're going to roll out, like, with their five eligible receivers, and like, Josh Downs is not going to be one of them. Like, they're not going to give routes to like Nick Westbrook Akine or Ashton Doolin or Mo Alie-Cox over Josh Downs. Like, because the team knows Josh Downs is good. Anybody with eyeballs knows that Josh Downs is good. So I think it's really like listening and following in training camp to see, as you mentioned, like, what are the formations that they're running. We were talking about this during the break. Like, Nate put out a really good video not too long ago. Nate Tice, obviously, put out a video not too long ago about where they, you know, they have the two tight ends on one side of the field and then the two receivers on one side of the field. So they essentially like can mimic a way where Josh Downs is in the slot or he's free from press as the Z receiver on the outside. So I'm with you that I kind of think the two receiver set, it's like we're overthinking it a little bit with Josh Downs, but even then I still think it will be important to track, because then that gets us into, is he a value, or like you said, is he a smash? And I think that's where we can find that out through these reports and everything with the Colts. But real quick before we take our final break, I do want to hear your thoughts on the Browns pass catchers. Next one up here, Browns pass catchers, what's the rotation like with those two rookie receivers, and what are the roles kind of enveloping there in Cleveland?
So this is one that I think we're going to have to really pay attention to in training camp, because out of OTAs, Denzel Boston was the one that was lining up on the outside and was the OTA MVP for the team, right? So they've obviously drafted Casey Conception as the first round receiver, and then Denzel Boston being the second round receiver. But they did actually say that they would have taken Denzel Boston at that pick if they didn't have Casey Conception available. So that's kind of interesting. Like, they still view him as a first round receiver. But they feel that Denzel Boston is that like big bodied receiver that they want to have out there. And this is a team that could play some, you know, 12 personnel as well. It's one of those things where it's like, who is the guy that's going to get more playing time? Isaiah Bond is also on the team. He has looked good for the team. They want to also still have Jerry Jeudy on the field. I think Jeudy will be their, what they're going to call their wide receiver one, but I don't think he'll actually end up with their top stats at the end of the season. But they want Jerry Jeudy on the field to begin the season, which then takes a receiver spot away from a guy like a Casey Conception. that slot receiver, I think it'll end up being KC to start the season, but I think you might see a little bit of a rotation with him and Isaiah Bond in that slot role. Eventually, what I think they'd want to do is probably get KC like rotating between slot and maybe on the outside, taking that Jerry Jeudy kind of opportunity. And that's what, like, not to make the exact comparison, because a lot of people make this comparison, but it is kind of what the Ravens have done with Zay Flowers, is like putting him on the outside, but then also in the slot, like moving him around a little bit more, letting Denzel Boston kind of be your like more X type of receiver, like on the line of scrimmage, taking the press. And then I think that they'll eventually end up in a spot where their top three receivers will be Boston, KC Conception, and Isaiah Bond. Bond being kind of also swapping between that like slot role and maybe like Z receiver type of role. This is pretty late in fantasy drafts to be able to get a first round rookie where KC Conception is going. Like historically, guys like this used to go in like the fifth round, and now we're starting to see them fall quite a bit because we've been burned by some of these rookie receivers. But, and I think you were on this too. Yeah, it's the Browns. I think you were on this too, but like KC is one of those guys who, when you chart his like college film, he jumps out on film. Like he's one of those guys that was getting open a ton. His biggest issue is catching the ball, right? And I always say this, and I don't know if you do it, because I just think like we sometimes overrate like being able to catch the football. It's like these guys are on the jugs machine all the time, and the variance year to year on like drop rates is so like widely variable.
Yeah.
So like, I don't worry about it as much.
I don't worry about it either. That's how I view it as well. And I think I actually listened to you talk. I kind of wonder if Jerry Jeudy could end up being a trade candidate at some point in training camp, where like a team gets a receiver injury or something. I'd have to look at his contract and everything, but I love the way you break that down as like Denzel Boston, probably the X, and then KC Conception could be the movement Z. Isaiah Bond is more talented than a UDFA because he fell obviously due to legal reasons, but he's like more of a vertical player as well. So I wonder if Jeudy could, I know they've said like, oh, he's our bell cow receiver, which makes no sense. So I that's at least on my radar, but I agree with you that the receiver usage in camp will be something that we have to track for Cleveland, even if it is obviously the Browns passing offense with some questionable quarterback play. So I'm glad you brought this one to the table. We are going to take our final break of the show here, and that is actually going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, if you're watching with us on YouTube, we're going to come right back, and then we are going to talk through the last few storylines. We're going to rapid fire these ones before we get out of here. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We are wrapping up the 12 storylines that Zane Dahani says you need to know and you need to be tracking here as training camps open up. The drum beats from the OTA, one of the louder drum beats from OTAs from minicamp, was for one Mr. Luther Burden out there in Chicago. Zane, again, I know you've been grinding the news more than anyone else, but we don't need even you to tell us. Like, it's pretty good news when the head coach says, I'm buying stock in this player, which is what Ben Johnson said about Luther Burden, and that headline obviously went wild. So what have you heard from Luther Burden so far? What are you looking to see in training camp with the Bears passing game?
Yeah, I think we want to hear about what their roles are and how they're utilizing the receivers. Like, everything that Ben Johnson has said about Luther Burden, obviously the buying stock part, but then he's also talked about him as a dynamic playmaker, right? So he's talked about his yak abilities. To me, that signals a player that you're going to use in more like underneath type of stuff, right? That's not the only thing Burden can do. He can operate kind of like somewhat at all three levels. He's a developing receiver, so we'll see what he brings in his bag this year. But he's one of those guys that, like, you know, coming out of college, we thought that his yak abilities were things that were really attractive about him. And so if they are thinking about, and you know, Ben Johnson is a noted, like, deeply analytical guy too. And if they are thinking about like utilizing him in that exact way where, hey, we're going to give him like the layup options, and then he's going to be kind of just utilized in as a guy who like breaks tackles, and then we trust him in short situations and stuff. I think that plays more favorable to Caleb Williams a little bit, right? Like Caleb likes to operate in like this crazy, nuanced, out of structure situation. But Ben Johnson wants to put structure to that. And Caleb Williams is also not like the most accurate person, especially down the field. And so that's where it's like, his accuracy might not be the best when it comes, and ball placement might not be the best when it comes to like these short kind of like routes, but they're gimmies, they're layups, they're easier. And there was an article today talking about making sure that he's able to hit his primary read more often, which I think will end up being obviously a quicker throw. And the quicker throws, I think, will end up going either Burden or Loveland's way. I really like Rome Odunze, though. So this is one of those ones where it hurts a little bit, but I do think that Rome has to operate as more of like the intermediate to deep guy, and the way they talk about it, not necessarily talking about him as like the yak type of player, which we know, like, that's not his profile. He's more of like a dominant, you know, like, yeah, exactly. So I think this is one where, from a fantasy angle, I think that Luther Burden is the right option of him and Rome Odunze, but their prices are wildly different. And then Rome, like, better football player at this point in his career, but just not necessarily, in my opinion, the role that you want to see in this offense, and the fit with Caleb Williams.
So I think, if it's what it, like, these guys are running the exact same route trees as they were last year, I agree with you 100% that like Luther Burden's going to get way more. And honestly, even if Luther Burden improves, he's going to run more layup routes than Rome Odunze, because he is just objectively way better with the ball in his hands. And I think Rome's fine as a tackle breaker, like, can get you a few yards here and there, but like, he's not somebody that is going to flip the field with the ball in his hands, which is what Luther Burden absolutely can do. The tough part is, though, like, Burden just never really had like a real role, you know, last year. Even once he got onto the field, like, they're still kind of using him in some more designery stuff. I mean, and I think he can do more of that. Like, I think he can be, Robert Mays and I were talking about this last week. We were just texting back and forth about Luther Burden comps. I think Luther Burden can be somewhere between like a combination of Rashee Rice and Zay Flowers, which, by the way, that's a pretty sick player. But I think he can be much more Zay Flowers than Rashee Rice, because, yeah, right. Zay Rice. I don't know. But I think, like, I think he can be more Zay Flowers than Rashee Rice, because he can really run some more downfield routes. We just haven't seen it yet. But he has to do that, I think, to meet his ADP this year, which is why I've just ended up taking more Rome Odunze, because I think this offense is going to be good. I think Caleb Williams is also going to get better in year three and year two under Ben Johnson's offense, which hopefully will allow him to hit some more of those deeper throws and everything. And it just, like, to me, it's, I like all three of these players. I like the offense. So I just end up taking the guy who's the cheapest here, which is Rome Odunze by a considerable amount. But I'm really fascinated seeing what you end up seeing about like Luther Burden's role and what are the routes he is running beyond just some of the gimme stuff, because if he's going to be, you know, like a fourth round pick in fantasy, he needs to do more than just run gimmies. Like, he needs to run the full route tree, which I think he can do.
I think he can too. The problem with last year was the mix with DJ Moore too. And for as much like as people think, hey, DJ Moore fell off the wagon or whatever you want to call it, I still think he was like a good, like, he's a good football player. He's not like a, not a bad receiver.
This doesn't fit the offense.
Yeah, exactly. And so I feel like they had to kind of like put people into roles that they don't necessarily fit in 100%, because DJ Moore was, in my opinion, in this like odd role that he doesn't necessarily fit in within that offense. And so that's where now I think you've got more like that distinct role where you can put Luther Burden into more of like, hey, you're going to play the slot some, you're going to play on the outside some, you're going to run the gimme routes. We're not going to have to split that with DJ Moore. You can operate in the intermediate, where DJ Moore was actually a little bit more dominant last year too. You know, I know people don't think that DJ Moore was dominant, but he was still good at some things last year. So that's where I kind of see it playing out. And then from a fantasy angle, this is like maybe a little bit galaxy brained, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this too. Like, they play
it's
in
the
Chicago
right show for it. So,
yeah, they play in Chicago, right? That's where I live. I've gone to so many games at Soldier Field late in the year. It's cold. The wind is blowing all over the place. Those deep routes, harder to hit. Easy routes, the gimmies, the underneath. And that's where I kind of lean fantasy playoff time. Are we going to see like Luther Burden stick out more? Or are we going to see the guy that's running the deeper intermediate routes like Rome actually stick out more? And that's the scary one for me. Like, I saw it in one, this actually happened early in the season last year. I think it was week three. It was a lot of wind. It was like 30, 40 mile per hour winds. And I tweeted about this. I said, Rome is not going to get the ball today because he's operating as a deeper receiver and it's hard to make those throws. They're going to have to make quick passes to make this happen. And he did almost nothing in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just completely out of the game. So I'm like, this is a weather weird, like a weird weather thing that I also think about for like fantasy playoff time that I think lends itself better to a Luther Burden profile. But, you know, we can't predict the weather. So.
Can't predict the weather, but you can kind of predict what the weather is going to look like in Chicago late in the year. and that's why I think that the run game is still going to be really important here. I'm fascinated also just with the offensive line, which I think could take a step back this year with the left tackle situation. Joe Tooney, another year older, although he was incredible last season. So yeah, lots of new center as well. Drew Dahlman's retirement looms large over this team. So I'm very in on this Bears offense, but you got to acknowledge some of the risks with like the verticality of Roma Dunze's role, even if you are like me, very, very bullish on the player. And just again, I want to bet on all these players, but it is worth like noting the weather concerns and the offensive line concerns as well. I'm hoping that like Khalif Raymond and Xavien Thomas can end up being like the sacrificial speed players, which allow like a Dunze to run more slants and quick hitters than he did last season. But that will obviously be TBD there. Last receiver storyline, Zane, and we can be quick with this one because it is just quite literally a question. Who signed Stephon Diggs? What have you seen so far? Where are we at with Diggs? And when do we think we can expect him to sign? Because there's still kind of a lot going on for Diggs off the field.
Yeah, so all the NFL insiders, Schefter, Jeremy Fowler, Ian Rappaport, that whole like crew of guys that like are the most well known, have basically said they're actually surprised that he hasn't signed yet. And that he had at least like five options on the table. Two of those options have lent themselves to the Commanders and the Ravens. And those are the two that I'm like really, really paying attention to of the rest, right? So I'd kind of like, I broke this down somewhere else, but I said Commanders to me is like a 50%, a 25% for Ravens. And then there's always the surprise, like, what if the Rams just want a dynamic wide receiver three and he wants to take some sort of pay cut to do that? There's always that like option that's at play. You know, if he goes to the Commanders, you know, we talked about Terry McLaurin earlier, but I still think that Diggs is a target commander. And, and I didn't say that as a pun. I think he's a target commander, and I could see him, especially the way that he has to like operate in an offense. I could see him maybe being like the higher target earner over a Terry McLaurin if they give him both like equal routes. And then obviously if he goes to the Ravens, I think it's probably a better fit because Zay is a little bit more dynamic in all the things that he can do. But I think that it would be more clean from a fantasy perspective because I think Zay is just like definitely the top tier guy when you compare him to a Stephon Diggs. So those are the two teams that I'm hearing right now. It is something that I'm tracking like diligently, checking any like little piece of information, but he is working out at the University of Maryland, which is, you know, home court for both Baltimore and the Commanders.
Yeah. He's from the area, the whole deal there. So yeah, I think those are the two teams that probably are the favorite to sign him. I think the Ravens will probably want to get into camp and see what Rashad Bateman can do, see what the rookies can do a little bit. You know, a lot of reports they're still counting on Bateman. Obviously, you know, my therapist says I'm not allowed to talk about Rashad Bateman. That still stands, hoping to get that lifted here pretty soon. But I'm going to wait for a couple weeks into training camp before talking Bateman once more. But yeah, Commanders obviously have a lot of room for targets there, but I agree. Like, I kind of want to see him with a team like the Rams or the Chiefs, even if like, well, Chiefs would be awesome, but that's like a pipe dream for me. Rams would not be great for fantasy. That would really mix things up, but they do kind of need a third receiving threat. And obviously I think he probably wants to win a Super Bowl at this point. We're going to hit three running back storylines here, Zane, before we get out of here. And I'm going to try to shut up as much as possible and just let you cook on these ones. So no pun intended there. Our first one is on James Cook and his pass catching role, which you highlighted earlier. So what have you seen on James Cook that might help his upside in fantasy?
Yeah, so one of the big things that I'm trying to do when I'm tracking all of this news is trying to figure out, is there consistency? Is there multiple reports from different insiders that are telling us, hey, this is what they might end up doing this season? And James Cook is the one where I've seen very consistent drumbeat across multiple insiders that are very trusted within the Buffalo organization that cover the team. And it's all been about, hey, Pete Carmichael was hired here to be the offensive coordinator. He has a history with Alvin Kamara, LaDainian Tomlinson, dating back to those days. And he has notably been very interested in getting these running backs, their primary running back, involved in the pass game more and more. James Cook coming out of college, right? His profile lend itself more to a pass catching role than it did even a rushing role. Like, I think most people were thinking that he would play more of like a gadgety, like running back than like the role that he actually has right now. So we look at like what an Alvin Kamara role has looked like in the past. And we're talking about like a something like 50 to 60% route share, which right now James Cook has been more like a 35-ish, 30% like route share kind of guy. So we're talking like that could lend itself to like 1, 2, maybe even 3 targets per game more. Now they may take away some of his like early down rushing work as well, but it does elevate the ceiling quite a bit. Like, think about this. If you get 1 or 2 more targets and you take away like 2 or 3 rushes per game, those targets are worth like, I think research has pointed to it being like worth like 2.5 more fantasy points from that angle. And I did the math on this too. I don't know if we're allowed to talk math on this show, but I did the math on this. We can talk math. Yeah, why not? If you add those targets back into his totals, it would probably add about 1 or maybe 2 fantasy points per game to his totals. And while that sounds small, it's pretty big, because what it ends up getting him to is more of like a 20 point per game, 21 point per game fantasy points in a full PPR league. And when you look at that, that's usually a top 3 receiver, or sorry, a top 3 running back season. Now, last year, that would have been running back 5, and he's going at like running back 6. But I think he's got a solid floor in itself. And then you add some pass catching duties, and let's just say for some reason they do full Alvin Kamara or LT. He could, like, this is one where if we knew that he was going to have this role and they said, hey, yeah, 60% routes, I actually think he would be the RB3 in terms of draft slot. We don't know it for certain, but I would draft him over Jonathan Taylor if I knew that this role was going to be his role.
I love that you brought this one up, because right now in my running back rankings, I have a Jonathan Taylor, James Cook. And I feel pretty good about that. But the bigger question for me, and I just recently made this change, is I moved Jonathan Taylor up ahead of like some of those receivers in the back half of the first round, like behind the big three receiver, or he's close with JSN to me. So the question then is, like, if James Cook has this role, I would draft him in the first round over guys like Jaxon Smith-Njigba or Amon-Ra St. Brown or Justin Jefferson. So this is going to be a critical one to track, because I think last offseason, and I've joked about this, like, we weren't down on James Cook. We just like never talked about James Cook, and he ended up being a great pick, because it's just like, we know what he's going to do. He's going to be the lead running back for the Buffalo Bills. Good pick. Just never really talked about him enough. And he ended up being he outkicked his fantasy value last year. I want to talk about James Cook more this year, and definitely point people to draft him, especially in that first round range. So really want to track that receiving usage for him. Next one up here is back in the AFC South. We're talking second Jacksonville storyline here. And this one's great, Zane, because I know you've tracked like the reports on Bashal Tuten versus Chris Rodriguez. Justin Boone and I were just talking earlier this week about Bashal Tuten. And I said, like, hey, here's the deal, man. His ADP is only going to go one way. It's only going to go up. I don't think it's going to go down. It's only going to go up. And then not but like 24 hours after that show goes live, there's a clip of Liam Cohen gassing up Bashal Tuten on Peter Schrager's podcast that's going all over the internet. I'm like, that ADP is already going up. It ain't been 24 hours since that show went up. So what are your thoughts on Bashal Tuten and the role expectation for the second year back?
Look, the interesting thing is it's more about Chris Rodriguez in some ways. The interesting thing with him is that he had foot surgery in the offseason, right? And there was like this whole mystery that was going on during OTAs. Nobody saw Chris Rodriguez. They weren't showing him anywhere. He wasn't out there on the field. And then come to hear about it from like a local Jags, Jacksonville, report that was like, he had offseason surgery on his foot. And there's been speculation about what that could be. A lot of people think it's probably a Jones fracture. Now, we can't get into the speculation part in itself, but if it is a Jones fracture, we've seen guys like Dez Bryant seeing guys like Sammy Watkins, Julio Jones, like coming back from that is really tough. Within the same season, your production is going to drop a lot coming off of a Jones fracture. If it's not a Jones fracture, that's fine. But are they going to limit his reps in training camp just based off of him coming back from the surgery? Is he even going to be ready for training camp? Leon Cohen said that he would, but that was, you know, roughly like 2 months ago. We haven't heard anything since. If he's not ready for training camp, then yes, Tootin's going back up again. The other nuanced approach that I take to this too is, okay, let's say that it is some sort of split. There's always situations where a running back ends up winning the job after some time. We saw Zach Moss and Chase Brown splitting a role for a little bit at the beginning of the season. Zach Moss got injured, and then Chase Brown takes over everything in terms of pass catching and the rushing duties about 2 years ago. The people that crush fantasy usually are the ones that can contribute in the pass game as well at running back, right? And the only one that has that profile, like to be a league winner, you have to have that kind of a profile usually, or it's like insane efficiency off of rushing plus touchdowns. And I don't know that Chris Rodriguez will get to that this season. You have to have that pass catching, and Bashaul Tootin has that profile more than a Chris Rodriguez. Rodriguez has like very few reception in his career. Now the ADP shows you that these two guys are kind of like obviously far enough apart where maybe it doesn't matter. But I think of Chris Rodriguez as more of like a small win. When you're drafting a Chris Rodriguez, you get like a seventh round value. Is that going to crush anything for your league? Like, are you going to know when to start this guy? No. But if Bashaul Tootin hits and he hits and he has more pass catching and he's doing some rushing stuff, that's where you could actually get like a second round value out of running back that's going in like a round five situation. Those are the types of things that I'm looking for. And it's okay to get like a seventh round value out of a guy that's going like round 10 or 11 or wherever Chris Rodriguez is right now. But again, like you're not trying to play for that small win. You're trying to play for the big win. And the big win is where Bashaul Tootin comes into play. The last thing I'll say on that is it's the same message that I heard across Kyle Shanahan, David Blau, and Liam Cohen. All three of these coaches, sharp coaches, from what I think will happen with David Blau, sharp coaches, they don't want to give up and tip their hand on run pass splits when they have personnel on the field. It's just that is a common theme that I'm hearing this offseason from a lot of coaches. Bashaul Tootin is the one that makes that all come to fruition. Chris Rodriguez in the game, it's most likely a run play. Bashaul Tootin's in the game, you can throw the ball and it would be fine. So that's the only thing I'll say on that. I am leaning Bashaul Tootin mainly because of that upside, but yeah, I wanted to throw out all the news that I heard.
I honestly couldn't have said that better myself. Like, yes, can Chris Rodriguez be a get on base pick? Totally. Could he be an ADP beater? Yes, but he is not going to be like one of the defining picks of fantasy football. And I don't know if Bashaul Tootin is going to be that. Nobody knows that. But he has a higher chance at being it. So that is why I do like where he is going right now. I think he's like perfectly priced. Unfortunately, that price is going to go up. Like yesterday's price is not today's price with Bashaul Tootin. And we're going to be able to say that a week from now and probably 2 weeks from now as well. So we'll definitely be interesting to track that ADP. And I think that transition does pretty well, honestly, the pass catching stuff at running back, Zane, to our final news to track here, and that is the Bucs backfield, where we've got the Bucky Irving, Kenny Gainwell situation. What have you seen from this one so far, and how do you see it shaking out? Because I don't have a good read here.
Yeah, so this is one where at the beginning of OTAs, we heard Todd Bowles actually come out and say, hey, Bucky Irving might not be back till summer or fall. And that like threw everyone for a loop. Everybody was so worried, right? Like, when is this guy going to be on the field? It's fall? Fall? I don't even have time for fall right now. Everybody's like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, am I going to be buying a PSL and Bucky Irving's still on the IR right now or what? But there was a recent interview with Bucky Irving where he talked to some like local reporter at his camp, and he said he's going to be there for the start of training camp. And so I like that is not a worry at this point in time. The bigger worry is the fact that they added Kenneth Gainwell to this offense and what Kenneth Gainwell offers from a running back perspective and a receiving perspective. And we're starting to now narrow the window of what are the things that Bucky Irving does better than any other running back on the team. Sean Tucker has done the goal line work in the past. And I believe that they are going to continue to operate with him playing in that short yardage role. And now they had Rashad White in the past too, but Kenny Gainwell is now a running back that can actually do stuff from a run game perspective as well, more than what Rashad White was able to do. And he showed that last year with the Steelers, and they paid him good money. And so everybody here now, from what I hear from the Bucks beat, is basically it's a 1A, 1B hot hand situation. Okay. And we see the stats for Bucky Irving last year. Obviously, he was injured for part of that, and that may have impacted his play. The offensive line was injured. Pretty much any single player on this offense was injured last year. Maybe not Kate Otten, but every single other player was. So that impacts performance as well. But the profile for Bucky Irving, he was a great college player. Not a really fast guy, more of a shifty player, a smaller running back. He has five games that he had in his rookie season where he had over 15 rushing attempts. And so we're talking about a small sample size for a guy that was like a fourth round pick in the NFL draft. I loved him coming into last season because I was like, man, this guy's super efficient. Yeah. But the worry from the Bucks and the reason why they kept Sean Tucker and the reason why they got Kenneth Gainwell is because they're worried about the blows to Bucky Irving. So my concern here is that they don't want to lean into giving him a big workload, and that I think they brought in enough competition in the rushing game as well as the pass game from a Kenny Gainwell perspective, where I'm actually leaning towards Kenny Gainwell being like the better fantasy pick because you get the pass catching stuff. But then a lot of really smart people, I don't know like who you've talked to about like the about Kenny Gainwell in the past, but a lot of people really like actually what he does as a running back and not just as a receiver, that he's like a way better running back than Rashad White. So I'm like leaning into the Kenny Gainwell part of this argument because, like I said, you're taking away goal line stuff and you're taking away pass catching stuff. And that, like, where's the upside coming from then if you're taking away those two things? Like, he's going roughly near Bashaul Tuten. And so, yeah, I'm worried about, like, what Bucky can actually do other than just being a really efficient, you know, kind of like two-down grinder between the 20s, which is basically what J.K. Dobbins' role is.
Right, and that's not very helpful for fantasy. At least we got a clip here with showing of him catching stuff. So there's that. But yeah, man, like at the beginning of the offseason, I thought I really want to be in on the Bucky Irving bounce back because, number one, this offensive line is awesome and is right now healthy. It was not healthy last year. Like Tristan Wirfs not being there at the start of the season when Bucky Irving, before he was hurt, like when he's out there, Graham Barton playing left tackle, he should be one of the best centers in the league, not playing left tackle. So then they signed Kenny Gainwell, and that throws a real wrench into it because I'm with you. Like right now, I look at a cost perspective, Kenny Gainwell is a much more interesting pick. So I think we're just going to have to track and monitor exactly how this backfield unfolds and like what the roles are because, yeah, the bottom line is Bucky can be a really, really awesome and effective back like J.K. Dobbins was last year and still not be very like anything more than kind of a boom bust running back three because he's not getting that pass catching work. And Kenny Gainwell, just that's what he's really, really good at. He was super valuable for that for the Steelers. I think you could argue that he was a little overinflated from a pass catching standpoint because Rodgers was just dumping the ball off so much. But even then, if he just eats into the pass down work, it's going to be a problem for Bucky Irving. So that is one of the more key situations to track as we get into training camp. Zane, this was an epic episode. This was awesome. I cannot thank you enough for all of the information that you gave out to the listeners here. You have been doing God's work sifting through all of this stuff. You've been an incredible follow on Twitter to keep up with it. And thank you so much for bringing all this to the listeners. I think it's going to be really valuable as people prepare for training camp and adjusting rankings and everything. So tell the people right now where they can find your work, what you're working on that people can check out as training camps get going and as we get into the NFL season here.
Yeah, so I think one of the big things that people can do is, one, follow me on X because that is where you're going to get all of the news and notifications. You could turn on the actual notifications. Your phone might actually die because of how many things I'm actually sending out.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. If you turn notifications on for Zane, get ready to like your spouse is going to be thinking you're having an affair. Or, you know, your phone is going to be blowing up. So I recommend doing it, but just be aware that's going to happen.
you know, you should know what you're signing up for. Regardless, yes. I'm doing basically a recap of all of that information that you can hear on Spotify or Apple or even on YouTube, where I literally recap all of the tweets and then also my thoughts on what's going on and how I'm kind of finding consistency amongst writers of what they're saying about players. All of that can be found on The Cut Up, which is my own personal like YouTube brand. It's The Cut Up Show on YouTube. On Apple and Spotify, it's just The Cut Up. Yeah, you can find me there. And then my written content right now is on Fantasy Points. So, you know, we talked about the route depth article. There's always going to be cool nuanced things that I'm going to be doing that are similar to that here in the future. But yeah, those are the big places you can find me. Thank you guys so much for following me and having me on.
No doubt, man. Keep up the great work. And yeah, please make sure you check out Zane's show and all of his written articles as well. He's not just a news grinder. He's a really good analyst as well. So that is going to do it for today's show. Information packed show. No question about it. But remember, we're 2 times a week right now before we get back to our daily schedule in August. So that means we've got another two episode week coming up next week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And it's finally time, folks. On Tuesday, the boys are in the building. Josh Norris and Hayden Winks make their Yahoo Fantasy Forecast debut on this show to share 10 guys they are strongly against ADP on. That's right. Welcome to the company, boys. Time to talk down some players and maybe get roasted for it later. We'll see how it goes. Until then, we are out.